Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Shalom Aleichem, Assalamu Aleichem, Namaste, Pak Sat Nam, Sat Sri Akal, Tashi Dalek, Ho Lila Tanyan Wase Yake. Welcome to this meeting of our Shir on Kabbalah, specifically post Lurian Kabbalah, and more specifically than that, Sabbatean Kabbalah. Now, we've been talking and teaching for the last few classes about the Torah. We've said that there were two Torahs given to the people of Israel in the account in Exodus. The first Torah was a spiritual Torah, a Torah d'atzilut, atzilut meaning emanation or closeness. And the second Torah was the physical Torah, de Berea, the Torah of remaking of the covenant that was broken when the first Torah was taken back. And why was it taken back? Because when Moses came down off Mount Sinai, he discovered that the people had created an idol of a golden calf and were worshiping this idol and were engaged in all sorts of revelry, sexual licentiousness, sins of every nature, and realized that they were not spiritually mature enough to accept or be able to have a covenant between them and God that was purely spiritual in nature. So he threw down those tablets and broke them. Went back up on the mountain, came back down with the Torah of remaking, which was a physical Torah, one directed toward taming the passions of the body, to disciplining and purifying the Israelites, to get them to the point where they were more perfect than they were before, until finally they were perfected to the point where they could receive the Torah d'atzilut that God had originally tried to give to them, but had to take back. Now, we've also said that God offered the Torah to all the nations first who rejected it. By nations, the Bible means the non-Jews. So all peoples who are not Jewish, which I guess we could just say then, are the Gentiles. So God offered the Torah to them first, and they rejected it. It was only after they rejected it and God went to the Jews, the last people left, and said, "Will you accept my Torah?" And they said, "Yes, we will," that he gave it to the Jews. So it occurred to me between Shirim, between classes, that it would be good if I were to clear this up, to expand on this a little bit, and clear this up. When did this occur with respect to the giving of the Torah by God when Moses went up on Mount Sinai and then brought back, and God descended to Mount Sinai and gave him the Torah for the Jews? How does that reconcile to the statement we said earlier, the teaching that God offered the Torah first to the nations or the Gentiles who rejected it? To answer that, I'm going to read some passages and discuss with you some passages out of a very old Midrash, which is a form of oral Torah. It's a method of teaching by commentary. And this Midrash is titled Perkei DeRabbi Eliezer, which means in English the sayings or ethics of Rabbi Eliezer. And who was this Rabbi Eliezer? He was a first century Christian or common era sage, a teacher named Rabbi Eliezer and the Great, Hagadol, the Great. And scholars now say that they don't believe that he said or wrote down all of this compendium of teachings. And what it is it's a midrash or commentary, running commentary and discussion on the books of Genesis, Exodus, and Numbers. And scholars don't really believe that he wrote down or said all of this, but it's been, but these sayings were compiled and were attributed to him, so they bear his name, Perkei de Rebbe Eliezer. And so I'm going to be reading some passages out of that and discussing them with you, and that will help us to understand a little bit better about why God offered the Torah to the nations and ended up giving it back to the Jews, and how this came about and when it came about in terms of the Exodus from Egypt and the appearance of God. The theophany is what the theologians would call that in a fancy name, the appearance or revelation of God on Mount Sinai to Moses, and then also to the Israelites who were at the base of the mountain. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to read from a section of chapter, looks like 47, of Perkei de Rebbe Eliezer, subtitled The Zeal of Phinehas. And it's section 66A1. Okay, A, and what it is one, but it's a small lowercase I. And here is what it says. Rabbi Eliezer, a Rabbi Elazar, son of Arak, said, "When the Holy One, blessed be He, descended upon Mount Sinai to give the Torah to Israel, 60 myriads of the ministering angels descended with Him, corresponding to the 60 myriads of the mighty men of Israel. And in their hands were swords and crowns, and they crowned the Israelites with the ineffable name." Okay, now, what that is saying is that when the Holy One, blessed be He, meaning God, and if you have your diagram of the 10 Holy Sephirot, you know that the Holy One, blessed be He, is symbolized by Tiferet. So when the Holy One, blessed be He, descended on Mount Sinai to give the Torah to Israel, this means that the original intent of God was to give this Torah to Israel. When He came down, 60 myriads of ministering angels descended with Him. Now, how many is a myriad? We know in general, just from general usage, that's a lot. But what it is that the word for that is transliterated in Hebrew is abra, meaning 10,000. So it says here that when God came down to Mount Sinai, the first time now to give what? The spiritual Torah to Israel. He was accompanied by 60 times 10,000 or 600,000 ministering angels. That's incredible, isn't it? Okay, and in their hands were swords and crowns. And this number corresponded to the 60 myriads or 10,000s, meaning 600,000, of the mighty men of Israel. Okay, so we are taught that when Moses led the Egyptians, brought them up out of Egypt, and took them into the wilderness, brought them to the base of Sinai, that the number that there were, and indeed, shortly right after this, a census was done, but the number just of the able-bodied men, and we could say this, the fighting men, I believe that's how the census was done, but the fighting men, the able-bodied men of and here it says the mighty men of Israel were 600,000. And elsewhere we hear it was 613,000. Here it says 600,000. And of course, the 613 would, if it was 613,000, it would correspond to the number of mitzvot, or laws and regulations, that were in the second Torah de Berea, or Torah of Remaking. But here we're told that it was 600,000. There was one ministering angel for each fighting man of Israel at the base of the mountain. And it says in the hands of these ministering angels were swords and crowns. Now these are metaphors. Okay, and it says they crowned the Israelites with the ineffable name. Now what is that? That means that they bestowed upon them the power and magic and mystery and glory of the ineffable name of God. That is Yod, He, Vov, He, the four letters, Yod, He, Vov, He. It's ineffable because it has meaning not understandable, inconceivable, has no meaning by itself. Many names have meanings, like Almighty, or El-Kai, God of Life, El Shaddai, as we said, God Almighty. But this name, Yod, He, Vov, He, not only has no meaning, but it has no pronunciation known to man today. The pronunciation was given originally and to be used by Aharon, Aaron, Moses' brother, because he was the high priest. This is all after this revelation on Sinai that this occurred. He was given this name and told how to pronounce it, but he could only do so on one day when he went into the Holy of Holies for certain purposes. Now then, these 10,000s, these 600,000 ministering angels descended with God onto Sinai, and then they went down, one for each one of the mighty men of Israel, and bestowed upon them, crowned them, is how it says, the ineffable name of God, Yod Heh Vov Heh. Okay, the passage goes on. All those days, whilst they, referring to the Israelites, had not done that deed, this is referring to, and this is why you need a teacher. These things would be meaningless if you just read them without anything more. But the reference here is, all those days whilst they had not done that deed, that's the sin of the golden calf, okay? It says, they were as good as the ministering angels before the Holy One, blessed be He. The angel of death did not hold sway over them, and they did not discharge any excretions like the children of man. So what this is saying is that when God first came down, He came down with 600,000 ministering angels, and He was saying, I'm going to give these people my holy Torah, my spiritual Torah to absolute, but I want them to be fit to receive it. And so the angels came down, one for each one of the men, and crowned each one of them with the holy name of God, Yod Heh Vov Heh. And when they did that, it transformed them, such that none of them could be touched by the angel of death. They had immortality. And they did not discharge any excretions. That means that they didn't urinate or defecate like the children of men. And it compares them here, like the children of man. Well, they were the children of man, but not any longer. Not any longer. They had been elevated spiritually, magically, miraculously, by the power of God through His ministering angels, to raise them up so that they could receive this incredibly beautiful, spiritual, marvelous, spiritual Torah da'atzilut. Then it goes on to say, but when they did that deed, remember, being worshiped the Holy Spirit, worship the golden calf. The Holy One, blessed be He, was angry with them. Now, why did they do this if they were raised up? Well, they did this, we are taught elsewhere by our sages, because the people who accompanied them, their friends that they brought with them, that they went to Moses when he told them they were leaving and said, I've got friends in my family. They're just like extended family. They're just like our family. Can they come with us? And Moses said, all right, we shall show them the God of Israel too, and he shall be their God and they shall be their people, his people. They came with him. But it was these people who, once Moses went up on the mountain, was up there for a while, who went to Aaron and said, he's not coming back. Look at all that thunder and lightning up there. That mountain's exploding. It's a volcano. The top of the mountain was torn off and went flying up into the heavens. Now, this would be more like Mount St. Helens blowing its top. They saw this. They said, he's not coming back. And, of course, Moses had left Aaron in charge, so the people went to him. The people not being the Israelites. The Israelites, now remember, had been elevated spiritually. They had been spiritually elevated, so it wasn't they who were doubting. But what happened was, these Egyptians came to Aaron and convinced him. Well, we don't know that for sure. I don't know for sure what was in Aaron's mind. I doubt that he believed them, especially since what he did. But anyway, they said this, Moses isn't coming back and we need a God to lead us out. In fact, I'll get to what I think happened here. To lead us out of this wilderness, to lead us through this wilderness. We need a God. He's not coming back. His God blew the mountain up and he's gone. So Aaron said, go and get all of your gold and silver and bring it to me. So they did. They went and got all their rings, their earrings, their pendants, the coins, everything they had, their different lampstands, whatever they had that was gold and silver. They brought it, gave it to Aaron. Then Aaron pulled a trick on them and threw all of this gold and silver into the fire to burn it up. But as he told Moses, when Moses came down and discovered them worshiping the golden calf, he did not say, I melted it down and made an idol for them to worship. Not at all. He said, I threw the gold and silver into the fire, the gold specifically into the fire, and out of the fire came the golden calf. So what we can take from this is that he attempted to destroy all of the precious metal that the unworthy Egyptians, the people who had no faith in the God of Israel, no faith in Moses as his appointed prophet, he took all of their gold and silver and did what he thought was destroying it by throwing it in the fire. But instead of it just melting and dissipating, going away, lo and behold, coming out of the flames was a living, breathing, eyes looking around with fire in them, golden calf. And this had to have shocked everybody. Now, where would this come from? This would come from the left-hand side of God. This would be the side of God that never wanted God to create a world in the first place, never wanted God to create man. This was the side of God that said, no, no. When that thought originally arose in Ein Sof, the totally transcendent God about which we can know nothing, when the thought arose in Ein Sof to create a world and creatures to bestow good upon, there was a part of God that said, No, this is just going to be a bunch of trouble. Don't want to do that. We're going to get torn apart. We're going to get split apart. It's going to be opposite against opposite. It's going to be, you're going to create a bunch of people who are going to sin, who are going to let you down, going to let us down. Don't do it. Well, this side continues to this day. The Christians call this side Satan. Hasatan is the Hebrew for it, and it just, all it means literally is the adversary. It's not a devil. It's just the adversary, and it's a reference to the adversarial personality of God. It's God who has woke up on the wrong side of the bed. It's the left-hand side. It's the side from which all evil comes, the side from which all darkness comes. It is darkness, darkness itself. So what it was the left-hand side of God said, this is a good time to make a move. Moses is up on the mountain. The top of the mountain has been torn off, raised up into the heavens. All of these people down here have seen this. And I'm going to rescue, I'm going to pull victory out of the jaws of defeat. Now, why would the left-hand side think it was the jaws of defeat? Because until this point, everything was going the way that Yahweh wanted it to go. The right-hand side wanted it to go. And the side of the center column in the Ten Sephirah is what I'm talking about now. Why? Because Moses was up on the mountain. God had lifted the mountain up to the heavens. And he had sent the ministering angels down, and they had crowned all of the Israelites, all 600,000 of the warriors, all of the able-bodied mighty men, with his holy name, Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh, elevating them spiritually and changing them physically so that death could not touch them, so the left-hand side couldn't touch them, couldn't take their lives away, making them so that even though they could still eat, they no longer had a need to excrete any waste products. So we know they were changed spiritually and physically. This was not going well for the left-hand side. And so he moved his people who used to worship all, who are pagans and worship many gods in Egypt, including a god of the left called Set. He moved in their minds and caused them to go to Aharon and say, give us a god to lead us through this wilderness. And Aaron, seeing what was going on, had thwarted that plan by having them gather all of their gold and bring it to him, saying he would, probably implying, if not saying to them, that he would make them a golden god. And he threw it in the fire. And at that moment, the left-hand side was in the jaws of defeat. But to rescue, to pull victory out of the jaws of defeat, Hasatan, Samael, the blind god, the blind aspect of God, said, aha, and who has great wisdom, said, aha. And what he did was pull a huge surprise, and that was he put part of his spirit into that molten gold in the fire and formed it into the shape of a calf, a golden calf, and had that walk right out of the flames, and had people see this, and they immediately fell down worshiping the golden calf, knowing that this was a miracle beyond anything they had seen, short of the waters parting in the Red Sea, which wasn't very long ago. But this is how fickle these people were. When the Israelites saw this, they too began to sin and engage in the sins of the golden calf and began to worship it and dance around it because it was such a powerful trick. You know, remember back when Moses was performing the miracles, the seven miracles with his staff in front of Pharaoh. The magicians of Pharaoh had been summoned, and they performed similar ones. So this is similar to that. They were using magic and the dark arts, and it was by magic and the dark arts that this golden calf came alive out of this molten gold that had been melted down by Aharon in the fire. So, this is what occurred. And then as we go on here, in Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer, it says, Let me find my place here. But when they did that deed, the Holy One, blessed be He, was angry with them, and He said to them, I thought that ye would be like ministering angels. As it is said, I said, ye are angels, and all of you sons of the Most High. That's a quote from Psalms 32, verse 6. But now, nevertheless, ye shall die like men. And that's Psalms, the very next verse, Psalm 32:7. So, God is angry at this and said, I thought you were going to be like ministering angels to me. But now, nevertheless, ye shall die like men. Rabbi Yehuda said, as long as a man is dressed in his garments of glory, he is beautiful in his appearance and in his honor. So were the Israelites when they apparelled themselves with that name. They were good before the Holy One, blessed be He, like the ministering angels. But when they did that deed, that's the golden calf, the Holy One, blessed be He, was angry with them. In that night, the same 60 myriads, 600,000 ministering angels, descended, and they severally took from each one of them, the able-bodied Israelite men, what they had put upon them, and they became bare, not according to their own wish, as it is said, and the children of Israel stripped themselves. And that's a reference to Exodus chapter 33, verse 6. And the children of Israel stripped themselves. It is not written here, quote, the children of Israel took away, end quote, but, quote, the children of Israel stripped themselves, end quote. Some say by itself their adornment was stripped off. So, what happened was God gave them the chance to be as ministering angels. But they committed the sin of the golden calf. And He sent His ministering angels down to strip them of the crown of the holy name that He had placed upon them, that gave them the spiritual and physical attributes of ministering angels. It says here in verse 33:6, it says, actually, I'll back up to 5, 33:5. Yahweh then said to Moses, say to the Israelites, quote, here's the exact quote that God said to give to the Israelites, you are an obstinate people. If I were to go with you even for a moment, I should annihilate you. So now take off your ornaments, and then I shall decide how to deal with you. So take off your ornaments, and then I shall decide how to deal with you. So, verse 6, so from Mount Horeb onwards, that's another word for Sinai, the Israelites stripped themselves of their ornaments. Now, on the surface level of interpretation, that means that they couldn't wear jewelry anymore. But it, as we've just seen, spiritually, mystically, no, it means that the ministering angels were sent back down, one per able-bodied man, and they removed the crowns of glory from the Israelites. Now, God, at this point, had turned His back on the Israelite people, on the Jews. And He decided that they weren't, that they couldn't have, and of course, He'd already given them the spiritual Torah. Moses had carried it down. But Moses saw it, he smashed it on the ground, and then God told Moses, tell him that I wanted you to be like ministering angels, but you couldn't do it, and you've angered me, and so now take off your ornaments so I can decide what to do with you. And the ministering angels removed from them the apparel and the ornaments of the holy, ineffable name, Yod-Heh-Vov-Heh. So God had turned His back on them. And And after a while, after they repent, then Moses goes and are punished by the deaths of many people. And I don't have that passage right in front of me right now. But after that, after they've repented and been punished, then Moses goes back up on the mountain again to get the Torah of remaking. But in the meantime, God had decided it wasn't for the Jews. He'd given up on them. How do we know this? Because in chapter 41 of Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer, in the section called the Revelation on Sinai, section 56b, lowercase I, it says, the sixth, as in number six, sixth descent was when He, being the Holy One, blessed be He, came down on Sinai, as it is said, and the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai, quoting Exodus 19, verse 20. On the sixth of Sivan, the Holy One, blessed be He, was revealed unto Israel on Sinai. And from His place was He revealed on Mount Sinai, and the heavens were opened, and the summit of the mountain entered into the heavens. Thick darkness covered the mountain, and the Holy One, blessed be He, sat upon His throne, and His feet stood upon the thick darkness. As it is said, He bowed the heavens also and came down, and thick darkness was under His feet. Rabbi Yarfon said, the Holy One, blessed be He, rose and came from Mount Sinai and was revealed unto the sons of Esau. As it is said, quote, and He said, the Lord came from Sinai and rose from Seir unto them. That's a quote from Deuteronomy 32, verse 2. And Seir means only the sons of Esau, as it is said, quote, and Esau dwelt in Mount Seir, end quote, end quote, Genesis 36, 8. So here it says that the Holy One, blessed be He, rose from Sinai and went. And so what this is after the sin of the golden calf. The Holy One, blessed be He, rose from Sinai and went to the sons of Esau. Who's Esau? Esau is the brother of Jacob in the past. Esau, who tried to get Jacob's true inheritance and birthright by fighting his way out of the mother's womb prior to Jacob being born. But it didn't succeed. And so when Isaac gave the birthright and promises to Jacob, and Esau found out about it, he swore to kill his brother. Okay, so here it says in Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer, after the sin of the golden calf. Now I'm saying that's not a quote from Perkei de Rabbi Eliezer, but I'm saying this is the sequence of events. It says, the Holy One, blessed be He, came from Sinai and rose from Seir unto them. And Seir means only the sons of Esau. And it is said, and Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. The Holy One, blessed be He, said to them, who? The sons of Esau, will ye accept for yourselves the Torah? They said to Him, what is written therein? He answered them, it is written therein, quote, thou shalt do no murder, end quote, citing Exodus chapter 20, verse 13. Thou shalt do no murder. They replied to Him, we are unable to abandon the blessing with which Isaac blessed Esau. For He said to him, Isaac said to Esau, quote, by thy sword shalt thou live, end quote, citing Genesis 27, verse 40. Then God turned and revealed unto the children of Ishmael, as it is said, this would be Isaac's brother, quote, he shined forth from Mount Paran. Paran means only the sons of Ishmael, as it is said, and he dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, Genesis 21, verse 21. The Holy One, blessed be He, said to them, meaning the sons of Ishmael, this would be like the Arab peoples today, will ye accept for yourselves the Torah? They said to Him, what is written therein? He answered them, quote, thou shalt not steal, end quote, Exodus 20, verse 15. Thou shalt not steal is written therein. They said to him, we are not able to abandon the usage which our fathers observed, for they brought Joseph down into Egypt, as it is said, quote, for indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, citing Genesis 40, verse 15. Thence he sent messengers to all the nations of the world. He said unto them, will ye receive for yourselves the Torah? They said to him, what is written therein? He said to them, thou shalt have no other gods before me. They said to him, we have no delight in the Torah, therefore let him give his Torah to his people. As it is said, the Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace. So, he offered, after the sin of the golden calf, in which the Torah de Atzilut, the Torah of nearness to God, which was had raised the Israelites up to the level of being ministering angels, had made them immortal, had changed their bodies physically and spiritually. After the sin of the golden calf, that was taken away from them. And God, in fact, turned his back on them momentarily and went to, first of all, the sons of Esau, and then the sons of Ishmael, and then all the rest of the nations of the world. This would be all the people who were scattered after the Tower of Babel was brought down because of the dispersal from all of the one language being changed into many. God went to all of those people and said, will you accept for yourselves my Torah? And every one of them asked the same thing. Well, what depends. What's in it? And God said to the sons of Esau, which be the Edomites, he said to them, he says, well, thou shalt do no murder. And they said, no, we don't want anything to do with that. We want to be able to continue to live by the blessing that Isaac gave us. And that was, by thy sword shalt thou live. So we want to be able to kill and maim, slaughter, whenever we have to. Look at the Christian church's history. I just ask you, look at the Christian church's history. Then he turned to the children of Ishmael, asked the same thing. Will you keep my Torah? And they said, well, what's in it? And he says, God says to them, thou shalt not steal. And they said, well, we're not able to abandon our practices that our fathers observed. For it was our fathers who brought Joseph down into Egypt. And indeed it was them. And these would be the Egyptians and the Arabs that we're talking about here as the sons of Ishmael through a descendant whose name was Mitzrayim. Then he went to the Holy One, blessed be He, went to all, he sent messengers, as I had mentioned in my earlier teaching, he sent messengers to all of the world and said, will you keep my Torah? They said, what's in it? He said, thou shalt have no other gods before me. In other words, stop making idols. And they said, no, there's no joy in that. So we're not gonna do that. There's no delight in that Torah. If we can't have idols, what's the point? So it was then that God came back to Mount Sinai, and he realized that the Jews were his last shot. And who knows if the Jews had not accepted this Torah, what would have happened? It's very likely that God would have swept the world clean, destroyed it, as he'd done before in the past, and started over. And this would be one of the first times that God comes to the point where he tells Moses, get out of the way, I'm going to destroy them, they're an obstinate, stupid people, and I'm going to make a nation out of you. And God was almost going to destroy them many times, but Moses was the great intercessor. He stood in relation to God as Yesod stands in relation to the rest of the Godhead. That's the ninth Sephirah, up above. And in between that and Malkut, the kingdom below, which is essentially the world of action, which world of Asiya, where we are, Yesod, Tzaddik, priest, is the intercessor and pleads on behalf of the ignorant people of the world for their continued survival due to the mercy, asking God to have mercy on them. So God comes back and says to the people of Israel, will you keep my Torah? Moses was there on the mountain to answer that question. And it was thus that he gave Moses, kept him there for 40 days and 40 nights, and gave him the second Torah, the reestablishment of the testimony of the covenant. And he gives him the Torah de Berea, which we know today as the Ten Commandments, the 613 laws, and it's made up of the first five books of Moses, the Pentateuch, the Hagiograph, books of wisdom, and the books of the prophets in the Old Testament. So the written Torah was given to Moses at that time, and that's what we now call the Old Testament. And the oral Torah was given to him, which is the guidebook, the owner's manual to the written Torah, the key, the translator deciphers key to the written Torah. So anyway, I hope now that this is cleared up a little bit about how there were two Torahs, but God didn't, how he gave the first Torah to the Israelites, but the spiritual Torah was abrogated by them because of the sin of the golden calf, and how that sin came about. And so then God abandons them, says they're not fit to receive my Torah. I'm going to see if anybody else is fit for it. And he asks each one of all the rest of the major peoples of the world, first the Edomites, then the Ishmaelites. They both reject it because they'd have to give up some of their sinful ways, mainly murdering and stealing. And then he asks all the rest of the nations of the world, and they just have to give up idol worship. Essentially just say, there's one God, and that God's you. They couldn't do it. And so God came back, asked Moses to answer on behalf of the Israelites, and Moses said, we're your people, God, and I'm your man. And so God then gave handed down and dictated to Moses, who wrote it down on the tablets and transferred into Moses' mind with perfect eidetic memory, it could never be flawed, all the rest of it, including the oral Torah, which has been coming down to us since about the 3rd century in the Christian era, and continues to be revealed through various Kabbalists, mystics, and other spiritual righteous people upon whom the Ruach HaKodesh, the divine inspiration, the Holy Spirit, speaks through and inspires. That will be all for today's Torah and lesson. And we are glad that you've been here, and we will be rebroadcasting this class tonight at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. And so if you wish to come back and hear part of this again, we welcome you. And if you have any friends or relatives who would enjoy this type of teaching, then we urge you to invite them as well. Our next live teaching will be Wednesday at the same time as this one, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, same room. Until then, remember God, and go from strength to strength, Zeigesund.